Welcome to the Membership Machine Show, talking you through your membership website from initial idea all the way to finished product. Here's your host, Jonathan Denwood.
Welcome back, folks, to the Membership Machine Show. This is episode 99. Well, we got one episode and get to our 100th show. What an achievement. In this show, we're going to be talking about a really important subject, but something that I think sometimes doesn't get the attention that it should do. And that's the best practices for creating the right membership content. Not, you know, for your courses, for your front pages, for your marketing pages. We're going to be looking at it all. I've got my regular co-host with me, Kurt. Kurt, would you like to quickly introduce yourself to the new listeners and viewers?
Yeah, Jonathan, Kurt von Annen. We own an agency called Manana Nomas. We focus largely on membership and learning websites and provide some learning products on our own. And I work directly with Jonathan at WP Tonic and the good folks at Lifter LMS.
That's fantastic. And I have to say, in this episode, we're going to be looking at all the different types of content that you need for your membership website. And hopefully we will be giving you some insights around best practice about what some things that you might forget, and just put a ton of information that hopefully you're going to find really useful. But before we go into the meat and potatoes of this great episode, I've got a message from our major sponsor. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Hi there, e-commerce store owner. At Omnisend, we help more than 100,000 e-commerce customers just like you sell their products. We're an all-in-one email and SMS marketing platform that helps you reach your customers, grow your audience, and increase sales. In fact, our customers have seen incredible results with Omnisend, averaging $72 in revenue for every single dollar spent. And if you ever have a question, our award-winning customer support team is available 24/7 every single day. That's one of the reasons we have more than 6,000 glowing reviews and ratings all across the web. So get started with Omnisend today and start growing your business with better email and SMS marketing.
We're coming back, folks. I also want to point out that we've got a great list of the best WordPress plugins and services, plus a great course done by Kirk himself that shows how you can build a membership website on WordPress using the best technology and the best practices in 204.205. You can get this course plus this created list of plugins and services, all these free goodies, by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals. wp-tonic.com/deals. You find all the goodies there. What more could you ask for? So let's go into an intro before we go into my list. So based on your experience, Kurt, what are some of the biggest mistakes or things that people misunderstand when it comes around content for their membership website that you regularly see when you're consulting, working with Lifter and working with WP Tonic?
Jonathan, I think it's really important first, like, because we're going to talk about techniques and what to make and how to make and things, but it's really pivotal, crucial, all these fancy words AI sticks out at people, imperative. You have to think about your audience and their perspective. 90% of the people that I help have a great idea, have some foundation of what they want to share, but they start creating the content from a look at what I'm offering, look at what I'm offering, look at what I'm offering, instead of the perspective of this is how I'm going to fill your need.
And well, it's very linked to what we've discussed in previous about the painkiller, rather than the vitamin. We've discussed this quite a lot, haven't we?
And but then that causes you to, when you start looking at it from the proper perspective, we say it over and over again. Why? Because 90% of the people we help are coming at their content from a wrong position. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to get people to see the value of your ideas or the value of your whatever by bragging about how awesome or what school you went to or the plaque on your wall, that's not answering the pain point. And so what happens is you end up having to curve your content. You end up going, okay, well, then maybe this, maybe this, maybe this. And you have to be willing to kind of hunt and peck around a little bit and sample some things to see what gets the likes, the shares, the momentum, and then double down in that direction. And then you can create all these cool assets.
Yeah, I think it's linked to, you know, I've discussed this with you quite a bit, this war and peace syndrome. People, they have all this knowledge that they want to share with people and build a great business around it, and it's totally fantastic. But they've got all this knowledge and they think, we need to get it into this course. We need to get all this knowledge into this first course, which is wrong anyway. They're just putting so much pressure on themselves. And secondly, they're not focused on outcome. They're focused on putting all this knowledge digitally into it, and it becomes this bloated beast.
Yes.
That becomes, rather than helping them move on and build a real business, becomes a burden in a way. It becomes an albatross around their neck. What do you reckon?
About that bloated thing, one thing that's very common with experts, with subject matter experts, is you begin to take your knowledge level for granted and you forget where other people were when they started the journey. And so, as a working example, I have a retail training product that teaches motorcycle dealerships how to increase their sales. Jonathan, one of the number one courses that we have in our 6-course offering is how to use the phone as a successful sales tool, because in today's marketplace, people don't know how to use the dang phone, and it sounds ridiculous. So from an expert's position, someone in sales, someone that works in this industry, you know, power sports, it sounds ridiculous that I'm going to have a course that teaches people how to answer the phone properly. But in practice, just think about your experience. If you call the car dealership to get an oil change, what are the chances that that person answering the phone answers it in a way that you as a customer expects to be treated? It's not frequent. And so a very basic course ends up being one of our most popular courses. And that's what a lot of course creators miss. They want to be the person that brings, you know, the new version of the wheel to the market. They want to be new and flashy and smart and make themselves look like they are the expert. But as an expert, you have to focus on basics as well. And a lot of times the basics is how you break the market and then you increase with your audience.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic observation there, Kurt. So let's go in to some of the basics. You know, I think obviously the written word is important, but I think because of the medium, because we're talking about a course that's digitally available, that it's video, that apart from the written word, it's video, that's the second biggest element. What's your observations about utilizing video in courses and membership websites, Kurt?
Well, there's two things. One, if it's not done well, it can really lower the value of your product. And that's bad audio, you know, distraction in the viewing areas, things like that. But done well, decent audio, doesn't have to be perfect, but decent audio, clear imagery, man, it just really brings it home. Even if you have the kind of content where you're having like, pardon me, almost an exact duplicate of what's said on video and what's said in print, it helps people to kind of track along with the reading while you're talking in the video. It just really helps with content retention and student engagement. I think video is a linchpin if done well.
I also think it can also become an enormous albatross, a secondary. Got a lot of albatrosses flying around, don't we? They normally don't fly in pairs. I think occasionally. All right. But I found it can become an enormous albatross. People, they spend too much money or they spend too much time on getting it perfect, and they need to get the fundamentals right. Or, funny enough, audio is so important when it comes to video. It's counterintuitive. But if you haven't got decent audio, nobody's going to watch your video.
And I want to break in for just a sec.
Yeah,
I mean, I literally just consulted with a customer this week who wants to make a 12-week training program, have it launched by February, and they want to use SCORM, built-in articulate storyline. And I'm like, okay, I'm tracking you. And then she says, but I really don't have the facility for making the videos. I don't have the studio and the space and the lights and the camera. And I'm like, whoa, slow down. I understand this is a corporate project, but you don't have to have all that to get a product good enough to launch. You don't need all that. If it was so popular and so good that 6 months later you wanted to come up with budget and remake some videos in a studio, you could, but get something done. Done is better than perfect.
Well, no, especially with you. Basically, you're just going to need a screen sharing functionality, a good mic, and most training videos, depending on the subject, either you're going to be utilizing graphics or you're going to be sharing your screen. The idea that you really need a top professional studio, I'm not really following that, but I hear it really regular. When it comes to the actual lengths of videos, I suppose it's dependent on the subject and the particular topic. But I do think, if you go above a certain length of video, and also the amount of different, and I'm terrible at this because, as people have observed, if they're regular listeners to this podcast, I can put about 5 different concepts in one sentence. And I think that's problematic when you're in training videos, because really one concept for each video. And have you found there's a sweet length, you know, a time length, or is that really totally dependent on the concept? And I think there's certain ideas and concepts that are well suited for video, but I do think there's more complex where it needs a lot of thought and it becomes a bit more trickier. What's your thoughts around this?
I think there's a ton of research out there, Jonathan, and I think there's a lot of people trying to portray themselves as smarter than they are on this topic. There's a resounding thought that microlearning is the only way to go, and that microlearning is where we break things into small chunks, small pieces, 3 to 5 minutes each broken into separate lessons, separate videos. And the ideology there is we have dumbed down students and society so much that, like, social media hits, like someone liked my post, it's a dopamine hit. It's a dopamine hit to finish a lesson, right? So it's like, I completed one, I'll go to the next one. I completed one, I go to the next one. And that dopamine hit gives them that chemical drive to get to the next lesson, the next lesson, the next lesson. But every time I catch myself really focusing on from a microlearning chunking perspective, I drive back to products like the Joe Rogan podcast at 3 hours an episode. And I said, wait a minute, people do have an appetite for long form content as long as they have interest or they're driven in that piece of content. So to your point, I think content has a lot to do with it. And I think as long as the topic can be focused on and not, you know, waffled about and hit 5 different things, as long as the topic has focus, I believe it can drive for, you know, 45 minutes is kind of like, I don't like to really go over 45 or 50 minutes in a single lesson. But I don't really hold myself to the 10-minute ideology unless the subject matter kind of dictates shorter micro-chunking subjects.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. I personally think there's 2 drivers around the micro-learning train. But I want to point out, I think micro-learning is totally appropriate in the right circumstance. I'm not bashing the whole concept. But I think it's become also a bit of a train and a bit of a cliche. And I think it's driven by two factors. Number one factor is the rise of mobile devices, especially smart mobile phones, to some extent tablets, but mostly driven by mobile phones. And because micro-learning is very a medium that is naturally aligned to being consumed on mobile devices, it's self-serving in a way. And secondly, I think when you delve into this, folks, if you ever do, into the whole science of learning, I'm no expert on it, but I've done a bit of a dive on it over the years, and there is a lot of pseudoscience in the science of learning. We have models. We do have some credible statistical and using brain scans and other techniques. And we have got some models that most of science or scientists involved in the science of learning agree to. But there's also an enormous, and I mean an enormous degree of papers, books, information that's based on pseudoscience around the learning area. When you delve into some of the most popular concepts around learning, and then you find out the actual science that was the basis of these movements, and that, you just start to cry, because it's pretty grim stuff, folks.
You know, they just said Fruit Loops were healthier than steak and eggs last year, so I don't believe a lot of science that comes out.
Well, I believe in the principles of enlightenment and science and facts and statistics. I don't, that's my bread and butter. There's another side of me that's more wacko, more spiritual, more religious, but I treat that as philosophy, which I equally think is important. But I believe in the real world, real facts, real statistics, real enlightenment principles. Not basing my basic concept of the world based on magic. That's problematic, and people that do that are problematic for me. They've got every right. If they want to base their knowledge on magic, that's their business. But I have a problem with that. So that's enough of my dribble. Let's go on to the next thing. We've got another 10 minutes before we go for our break, folks. This is the thing that I think a lot of people don't utilise, and I think it can be really great, and you can also use it as lead magnets as well. It's workbooks and action plans. What's your thoughts over this?
I have a lot of painful discussions over the workbook topic, because I don't know what's going on in this, especially this last 60 days. Workbooks seem to be the coveted thing, right? So there's a couple of third-party applications out there that actually let you make a formatted workbook with fillable lines, and it's online, and it's a subscription account. Each user has their own thing, and there's a place for that. There is. However, there are, in the terms of running a learning management system or a membership site, there are plenty of ways to use a fillable PDF worksheet. There are ways to use the assignment function in your LMS to get people to submit something or write something, or you know, submit a short video. There are, like, for action plans, there's ways to use assignments and quizzes to, like, drive survey results through your students. So there's ways to do these things. But when you say, I want to have a 75-page workbook that I give to all of my students, that this, that, and the other thing, for something you're trying to teach online, you are splitting the attention of your student between two mediums, and you run the risk of really inhibiting their ability to succeed. And remember, course completion. So course sales is like your number one concern. You want to drive revenue. After course sales, course completion gets to be the next big thing. And if you create too many obstacles to completion, you interfere with your own level of success.
I think you well put that. I think it's driven. The enthusiasm for this is understandable, and I agree with it. But it's also driven by AI, because there's some AI platforms and some of the leading SaaS learning management systems that have introduced this as well. And it's like all, it's like the trend around gamification. It was, in the right circumstance, in the right membership model, it's a great thing, gamification. It's a bit like what I said about video being driven to some extent by mobile, gamification was. And there is a great in the right course, in the right circumstance, but it was totally abused. It was utterly abused as a concept, gamification. In the end, I became sick and tired of hearing about it in the e-learning space.
Yep.
Because it was totally abused. Would you agree about that?
I struggle with that topic, Jonathan, because I never understood gamification. I thought that was the dumbest thing you could possibly do in any.
Share your strong views. Good.
I was really against it. I thought, what a pain in the butt. I got to build it. I got to track it. I make these people jump through hoops. But here's what happened. I ran Ducati North America's training program, and someone said, you should gamify this. You should gamify. I said, that's stupid. I'm not going to do that. And then finally I said, okay, if you complete this course, you get to be a Ducati monster. If you complete this course, you get to be a Ducati street fighter. And if you complete all the courses, you get to be a Ducati Panigale.
Right? I'll do the course just to get a title.
It was a stupid little picture of a motorcycle with the title Ducati Panigale next to your username.
Oh, definitely. I'll do the whole course for that.
The completion rate and the consumption of the courses went through the roof. Everybody loved it. When I did the live in-person trainings, the practicums, to make sure I could certify.
Did you dress people as one? Did you have a mask?
I didn't dress as one, no. But they would come to class and be like, I'm a Panigale. And I'm like, this is ridiculous.
Oh, my God.
This is ridiculous. But that was my real-life example.
That's so American, folks. I'm English to my core.
Yeah, it was my real-life example of Sometimes the things that you feel as a creator are completely off base. And that's why it's so important to get the feedback from your users.
Well, that's the other principle that, before we go for a break, I kind of push in this podcast, is don't build your war and peace, because some of the things you think are gospel, that you think that the students are going to love, they don't care a damn about. And the things that you think they won't rave about, they go potty. And I've learned that in building my online businesses, the things that I think my customers are going to really want, they're totally indifferent to it. It doesn't. And then the things that I think they're not going to really rave about, they are really important to them. So you really, and the example you just made is a superb one of them, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like buying your toddler's amazing Christmas presents, and when they unwrap them, they just play with the boxes.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? Or a dog, you know, or pets.
Yeah,
buy them a really expensive pet toy, and they're indifferent. And then some crummy other thing, they're fascinated by it, aren't they?
Yeah, you suck.
Yeah, maybe not that, but there we go. Don't get that personal. So we're going to go for our break, folks. We've got a ton of stuff. Hopefully we'll get through the list a little bit quicker. We might not get through it all. We just have to see. But I think we've covered some great stuff in this first half and hopefully giving you some great signposts and things to think about. I think we've achieved that. We're going to go for our break, folks, and we will be back in a few moments, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Conversio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Conversio at conversio.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. We've had a feast of knowledge around content in the first half. Before we go into the second half of this show, I just want to point out we've got a great free resource for you, the person looking to build their membership community website in the end of 2024 and the beginning of 2025. And that's the Membership Machine Facebook group. It's totally free. It's a mixture of WordPress junkies and people like you trying to build a membership website. Why don't you go over to Facebook, put in the Membership Machine Facebook group, you'll find us and join for free. You'll find it a great resource. So, live webinars. That live webinars groups, they are two, you know, they're kind of two different beasts, but there's a lot also in my mind. I just want to see if you put your own thoughts on this. There's a lot of cross-fertilization between groups, group coaching, group discussion, and webinar. There's a lot of cross-fertilization, and it can really offer, especially if you have a basic level and then you grow the course out and you have different levels of membership with more group, some individual coaching, mentorship, whatever terms that you want to utilize. And there's a lot of, once again, I'm going to, my third time, cross-fertilization here. What's your own thoughts?
Well, for me, in today's tech world, there's no replacement for virtual live meetings. There's no replacement. The engagement, the personal touch. I mean, short of driving to somebody's office and shaking their hand over a conference table, you're not going to do much better than hopping on one of these products like StreamYard, Zoom, Jitsi, all these things we're going to mention. I will say that I consider there to be three levels of video interaction with students and clients. The first one is the webinar. The next level up would be the group sessions, like the masterminds, right, for group coaching. And then the highest level is the one-on-one live coaching, because each one is dependent upon a different level of your personal involvement and brain power. So a webinar, you're in control of it, and they're just an audience. The masterminds, the group conversations where everyone's on the same screen, that's peer-to-peer training, but you're exhausting yourself because you're moderating that training and guiding the conversation. That's a lot of work. And then the last thing, the one-on-one coaching, well, that's you're giving all of your energy, all of your abilities to one person at a time. So that to me is the highest level of video-induced communication.
And it might have been the last week or the week before that. It's all merging into 1 week, basically, folks. But we did a dive about the technology around this. You know, we discussed Zoom, whereby, and Discord. Well, Discord is a strange thing because, yeah, and Jitsi, they're kind of for Discord is a kind of community, but you can use it for group discussion as well. But I think it was last week or the week before that we did a dive. So have a look at some of our previous discussions, folks. If this it's your first sample of the Membership Machine Show, because like I say, we did a big dive into that. Case studies. What's your thought? I think people can learn about and learn a lot. So they're like mini biographies, aren't they? Case studies. People can learn a lot from a case study, can't they?
I look at case studies from a different perspective. Mm-hmm. Can we learn? Absolutely, we can learn. But to me, there's the gift of third-party edification that comes with a case study. So if I'm the course creator and I'm constantly beating my drum about how important X, Y, and Z is to find success as my student, I can only say that so many times in so many ways before I sound like all I'm doing is putting the spotlight on myself. But if I put the spotlight on a successful client, on a successful user or student through a case study, it's that third-party edification. That person's success is a mirror of what the program creates. And it adds such a deeper dimension to commitment and, you know, proof of concept.
Yeah.
It's huge. It's huge.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go on record. I'm going to add to this. Again, I'm going to use a big number. 90% of the clients that I have are too scared and too timid and too everything else to ask previous successful clients for testimonials and case study information. You could have the best successes in the world, but if you don't share those successes with others, nobody knows about it. And it's actually helping helping the subject of the case study grow whatever they're growing to share their successes anyway.
Fantastic. I've put down concepts from existing content. I worded that incorrectly, really. What I really meant to ask you is, got any insights about using, you know, most people, not always, a lot of people got existing content and it's utilizing it in the best way or not, normally not. They don't. That's why they're best to hire WP Tonic or hire yourself. Got any insights about the woes of you or the opportunities of using existing content for your membership course?
I think if you and I are going to be transparent in this show and really tell people what it's like, I think you and I are both kind of experiencing a little of this right now, Jonathan.
Yeah, he's doing a big job at WP Tonic, and we're getting there, but it's been a bit of a...
Over time, so much content, so many ideas, so much information is shared, and we work ourselves to death trying to come up with the new information or the new take, and a lot of this content is 2 years old in the back of our posts. And so recycling, repurposing existing content is a huge tool, but it's also a huge lift. My personal site is more than 15 years old now, and I have hundreds of blog posts. And I just very recently, maybe inspired by some of the work at Lifter and some of the work with WP Tonic, said, hey, I should probably look at some of these old posts and see what's valuable in here. And then you go, oh my goodness. Or you listen to an old video that you made, you know, 2-3 years ago, and you go, how come I didn't share this 50 more times? There is an unbelievable amount of content that you can recycle, repurpose, and reuse. And it's almost like you need to have another, you know, headcount around to help you with it, because it can be a big project if you've been around for a while.
Yeah. The science of image and infographics. It's not, it looks pretty. It's about how the human mind works, folks. And we absorb visual information. We can process visual information at a much higher rate than the written word. What I mean by that, you know, a concept, a complicated idea can be... That's why cartoons, political cartoons, or certain visual art can be so powerful, because they get to the crux of a complicated political concept or a truth, a social truth, almost instantaneously, the power of a photograph can be enormously powerful. And you find that that's what we're talking about, infographics, when it comes to trying to get concepts, knowledge to your students. Am I on? Do you think I'm on the right track here, Kurt?
I agree. I also warn people not to lean too heavy on it like a
crutch. It's totally abused as well.
Totally abused. You know, not every lesson needs its own infographic. You know, like in a course with 5 or 6 lessons, you know, one infographic to cover those 6 lessons or 6 stair steps to success or however you envision your graphic is sufficient. So I tell people they're awesome, you know, well done. They're really awesome, but not to overuse it.
Well, they're going to be flogged to death because of AI, aren't they?
Yeah, because it's everywhere. But a really great tool. And the way that Jonathan described being able to make a lot of concepts really succinct into one image, once something visually that someone can identify with, is super, super important. Using all of somebody's senses is a really great way to make sure you bring home the learning and the retention.
It depends because I'm not trying to be, it's really a difficult area because until AI, you know, to hire a graphic person and then that person to work with you, there were people, Kurt's got resources, individuals that got the experience that might be able to produce a infographic. But it's expensive. It's expensive to hire those type of individuals with that experience and skill level. Yeah. What hopefully AI might offer is that depends on the AI, doesn't it? It just depends. But there is also going to be a lot of junky AI out there that's going to produce a lot of junky infographics.
And as you're speaking, there are probably a high percentage of people going, why don't they just talk about Canva? Canva's so easy. It's the easy button. Canva is highly abused by mediocre artists. We're putting out a ton of crud off of Canva. Just because they give you the template for the infographic doesn't mean you're the infographic expert. A lot of times, what you're putting out is really substandard.
I disagree. I know exactly, and I do agree with I will push back a little bit because a lot of these people just didn't have the money to hire.
Yeah.
And if you saw the type of graphics that were being utilized before Canva was in some ways an even worse situation, but they were never going to hire experienced people because they just don't have the budget. So I'm in the kind of middle ground, but I do see where you come because there's also people that can afford to hire people or they're utilizing it. They basically are graphic challenged, basically, folks. You still got to have an eye for it to some level. Well, I say that, it's the same thing when it comes to utilizing website themes, starter themes. Basically, you want to choose a theme and then change the colors and change maybe some imaging and maybe one or two layout. But you get people that are visually challenged, to say the least. They take a starter theme and then they hack away, and they end up with a real dog because they've got no eye for it. You can't hack away at one of these themes, folks. Well, you can a little bit, but you really want to do the minimum and then get your business and then hire somebody that has got the eye for it. And understands information before the fold, calls for action, lead magnets, all the things that around conversion that you probably don't understand, but you don't need to when you're starting off anyway. I was waffling there a little bit, but I don't think it was too bad, was it, Kurt? All right, on we go. Interviews. I put that on the list. What do you think? I think, people in the industry bringing them in, sharing their knowledge as part of a certain subscription level, I think that can be quite useful, can't it?
I think about my experience at my first WordCamp. And, you know, I had had the Mañana No Mas podcast for a few years, but I didn't think anybody was listening. And then I'm walking through WordCamp and some lady goes, "You're the Mañana No Mas guy." And then you get to realize, because I stopped and I had a conversation and I talked to someone else that knew me from being on these streams. There is a very tangible value to doing interviews, sharing space with people, having conversations, and displaying yourself as an intelligent, you know, communicative person. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's right. I think it can be really useful. Content archives. Yeah, another really interesting concept. I think it encourages people to keep their membership renewed if they have access to a library of content and info that's constantly updated or periodically updated with new content. I think that can be a great reason for people to keep their membership going. What do you reckon?
I agree. I think of content archives as being more like a library of existing stuff. I think about all the content I've made with Mañana No Mas over 15 years, and it's a pretty impressive library of stuff. And so for certain members or certain people that participate at a high level, I give them access to, you know, kind of an archive of resources. And there's a lot of value in that. People see like, oh my, you know, I might not take every new course that the guy makes, but he's got this library of stuff that I can refer to. And there's value in that.
Community forum, a bit like is a powerful tool. It's building community online. It's going to be, in the next 2 years, in the next couple of years, is already the catchphrase of membership, really. It's taken the space of gamification. And just like gamification, there's a lot to it, but it's also going to be brutally abused. I mean, already is in some ways. So what's your feelings and the things that you want to put in front of our listeners and viewers around community forum and community in general, Kurt?
This is a hard one to be honest with, because creating community is a big product for WP Tonic, right? Part of the hosting package.
Oh, it's really important, but people just don't understand what they're getting involved with, do they?
I personally think when I talk to my clients, I have real life conversations. And I say community last, get your content done. Do you have any paying customers? Do you have any paying members yet? Have you begun to create any revenue? Do you have any momentum? Because if you launch community with no members, no momentum and no revenue, you've created yourself a lot of extra work and moderation and maintenance and promotion for something that may not get traction. I always say that if you create community too early, and we've said this on earlier shows, so I don't think I'm competing with an earlier message, but if you create the community too early in your project, it's like having a really cool nightclub where no one shows up to dance. Like there's, you know, when you go to a nightclub to have a couple of drinks with your friends and you walk in and that club sucks. And you know, when you walk into a club and you go, this place is popping. And I think there's a certain energy that comes from a website that has traffic and has use. And then when you have that energy, you launch the community as a new feature, and then you've got something you can really run with. So I think timing is really important with community, how you launch it and then how you maintain it and moderate it. Jonathan did mention extra work, and running a community in addition to learning and e-commerce and social media planning and all these things, when you add community, it's not just one extra task on the list. It's like doubling all the tasks on your list. There's a lot to running one.
I understand why they're attractive. why people are so attracted to this, because it seems to solve a lot of problems. They think it will become, they get everything back to front, folks.
Yeah.
They think it's a reason why people will join the membership. No, where community is, it reduces churn. That's where, why community, but it will, but it is something, you want my opinion, folks, if, unless you've got a community on some platform that is really engaged in your content to a very high level, you are wasting your time going down this path big ways. And it will result in probably your membership failing to some extent, and you getting very disenchanted very quickly. But it can be, if done in the right way, but it cannot be the main reason why people sign up for your membership. There's an example in the WordPress space. There's a gentleman called Kevin Geary. He has a tremendous community. I am envious, but I've utilized podcasting. The problem with podcasting is you don't get a lot of feedback. We love, by the way, I love to get feedback from you folks. You can go to the WP Tonic YouTube channel, or you can join the Facebook group. That's a great way for you to give us feedback. I love you to join the Facebook group. But podcasting, I love podcasting, but the problem is it's very hard for people to leave comments on an audio podcast, right? But he's built a really fantastic community, but he started off developing two fantastic digital products, SaaS products, for his target community. And he also did a lot of education about how to utilize those products in the best way, and offered a tremendous load of free, high-quality YouTube and other content around the area of web design development, with emphasis utilizing his tools, and built up a community that way. And now his community is rabid about him. I know no individual. There's only one or two people, Paul from WP Tuts, Adam from WP Crafter, that have more rabid followers. But if he just had started a community, nobody would have been interested. Nobody would have known about him. Nobody would have cared. Can you see where I'm coming from, Kurt?
Yeah. It's that momentum, that energy that comes with it. It's an intangible that makes itself tangible, right? Because it's in the results.
On we go. Exclusive downloads. What do you reckon about this one?
I'm off the reservation on this one a little bit, Jonathan. Some people listen to experts like a Gary Vaynerchuk kind of person that's going to say, give away your best stuff for free. Just give it away and they'll realize their value and pay you all the money anyway. And I'm like, okay, that sounds counterintuitive. But, you know, that guy's making a bazillion dollars with that message. There's a lot for me in like, okay, exclusive downloads. So your level of exclusivity is completely up to you in your project. It's very use case specific. So is it just for paying members? Is it for people to exchange an email address to get a free white paper to be marketed to later? When we say exclusive downloads, that exclusivity is a very flexible term and I think implementation. So that's up to a consult with your web person or your marketing provider or consultant, and see what works best for you. But there's a lot that you can leverage through offering people exclusivity and content.
Yeah, how we're doing for time. There's some overlap with some of the points I've got on my list. But let's go to podcasting. What's your views around podcasting, around membership and community and blah, blah, blah?
You know, as I said earlier about that WordCamp experience, I had really thought my podcast was failing and then started to run into people. And it happened at a motorcycle dealership. I was meeting with the general manager and the owner called on the speakerphone and he said, Oh, is that guy from, I was working for another company at the time. He goes, is that guy from so-and-so there? And he goes, oh yeah, Kurt von Onen's here. He's in the office with me right now. He's on speakerphone. And the owner of the dealership goes, is that the Mañana Nomás guy? Which I, you know, again, I'm like, this is shocking. And the guy says, I've been listening to him for 3 years. Whatever he recommends, we'll write the check. Don't worry about it. And that sales call was over. It was like, we're done. We sold the training. We sold everything we needed to do based on the confidence they had in my abilities based on the information I had shared through the show. So I think that podcasting, I almost turned it off. And then I hosted through Anchor and Spotify. And Spotify sent me an email 2 years ago that said, your listenership is up 300%. Congratulations. And I thought, well, if people are actually listening, I can't turn this off now. I got to keep going. So I use it. I struggle. And this is a weakness for me. Maybe it is for you too. I don't know, Jonathan. But I
struggle with weaknesses? Never.
I really struggle with what is it really doing? Because it gets distributed to so many different channels. And then I don't see numbers that are very impressive. I don't see a lot of listeners. I don't see a lot of revenue share. I don't see things that, you know, you would think would be signs of success. But then when I am marketing myself or networking or doing things, people bring it up. So then I'm like, it must be doing better than the numbers tell me it is, because I'm constantly seeing real life examples of it creating notoriety. I think it's a really good tool.
Yeah. Being invisible in 204 and 205 in any shape or form, professionally, or definitely trying to build a membership business, ain't going to work out for you. Being the invisible expert isn't a strategy, folks. I'm sorry. We're all, you know, I forgot the name of the American artist that said we're all going to be stars for 15 minutes. Walpole? I think it was Walpole. That said we're all, and he was right. We're all going to have our fame for 15 minutes, but being invisible online, folks, and then deciding to start a membership business isn't a great concept, folks. You can still get success. Depends what you mean by success, because we've also done a show a couple of weeks ago where I got my math wrong, because it was early and I hadn't had my 4 cups of coffee. Kirk started scratching his head and pointed out my math wasn't well. But you... Where I think where the real, especially people starting on this journey, where the real Goldilocks area is the $497 for your course. I think if you get any exposure, going on other podcasts, going on other people, you know, forums, Reddit, anywhere, and you got the right verbiage and you're clearly identified a pain point, anodyne, aspirin, a relief point, and your verbiage on your landing page, and you got a course for $497, there's a good chance people are going to buy it. And when you look at the math, you don't need an enormous amount of sales to gather a sizable amount of money to help you invest into the next stage of your business, into maybe utilizing paid advertisement, which is the gasoline on the bonfire. And a lot of people, what I hate about this industry, folks, are these vultures that are preying on people, saying that you can start a course and people are going to pay you $5,997, or you're going to sell a course for $197 straight away. It ain't going to happen, folks. It's garbage. But you probably can, from the beginning, sell somebody something for $497. And you don't need thousands of people to get enough resources. So you can then, in the next course, sell something for $1,997 or $4,997, right? But that's, I hate these vultures, Kurt, with a passion.
Well, a lot of what you're talking about with pricing strategy doubles back. It folds over the conversation earlier in the show about, you know, the coaching live session opportunities. So when we repurpose a course, if someone wants to sign up and take a course on one of my properties with no coaching, no training, just access to the static course material, you know, that might be the $497 example. And then, you know, the $997 example is going to be get access to our monthly webinar. And then the $1,597 example is going to be join the mastermind group, you know, group peer training example. And it's still the same static content. And then, you know, when you get into that $3,995 thing, you know, $4,000, $5,000, that's one-on-one concentrated coaching, you know, with the creator and that same static course material. Because the magic's in the coaching.
Yeah. I think you made a fantastic point there, and there's so many opportunities, and there are some influencers out there, well-known ones, that are really taking people to the cleaners. But we're all adults. We all can make a judgment who we're going to allow in our minds and in our hearts, and we're all adults, and we've got to take responsibility. Hopefully the people... This podcast is growing. The audience is growing quite considerably. So I think with Kurt's help and my other regular, Haroon, and some of the guests that I've had in the show, we're building a reputation and giving great advice and insights and being honest with the audience, because there's enormous opportunities here. And online education is only going to grow and grow and grow. But unfortunately, there's a sub-sector of the market, and they are just vultures, in my opinion. But don't forget, there's tremendous opportunities, folks. So, Kirk, what's the best way for people to find out more about you, your thoughts, and what you're up to?
Well, business-wise, anything Mañana Nomás leads back to us. MañanaNomás.com, Mañana Nomás on X, Mañana Nomás on Facebook. But if it's a personal connection you want to make, jump onto LinkedIn. I'm the only Kurt Vonnegut on LinkedIn. I'm easy to find. Connect with me and we'll have a conversation.
And do you offer any resources on your own websites that give general advice about starting a membership website that you want to promote, Kurt?
Well, we do have a course about migrating enterprise SCORM level packages to WordPress. That's a big one because we save companies a ton of money on moving their content. But we also have how to grow your LinkedIn audience, you know, how to market yourself on LinkedIn. We have how to build a WordPress site more from scratch in our WordPress tips and tricks section. But I don't think it measures up to the course that's on your own site with WP Tonic, because
which is a partnership with
That course that we have on WP Tonic, Jonathan, is perfect for people in your hosting environment, because we really focused on what WP Tonic offers in the hosting package, and that's a really good jump start.
Yeah, but I'd like to point out you don't have to host with WP Tonic to get value from that course, folks. What we've done is at WP Tonic, we offer great hosting, but we also provide all the leading tools. But you can buy these tools independently if you want to. But what we've done with Kirk, and he's done a great course with us, is we've shown you the modern way to build a WordPress membership website and shown you all the leading tools in one place. So you don't have to waste a ton of time because WordPress, I believe, is a fantastic medium to build a membership course. Gives you the maximum ownership of your business in 2024 and 2025, digital ownership, which is really important when you're investing a lot of time and energy in an online business. So it gives you the maximum ownership, flexibility. You're not going to want to build something and not be able to do it on a SaaS platform. It's a fantastic platform to build something. But the problem is you've got a tremendous degree of choices, and that can cause a tremendous degree of confusion. But in this course, we show you clearly the best tools and methods to build a membership course from beginning to end. And it's a fantastic resource. And you can find that by going to wp-tonic.com/deals, and you find all a discount code for that course. What more could you ask for? We're going to end the show this week. We will be back next week with a great subject. We'll see you soon, folks. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Membership Machine Show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes and leave a rating to support the show. Until next time.